The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Tip of the cap to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Oh, man. You know, I had this whole, like, fantasy that I was going to bring in an example of every one of the hats we talk about today from my collection and, like, you know, show them to you guys. This is a snapback. This is a trucker, whatever. Yeah, yeah, this is a fitted. I mean, not that you guys didn't know, but I really wanted to do a bit, and I just didn't do it. It's cold. I have a headache. It's the thought that counts, though. I do love a baseball cap.
You have a hat on, at least.
Well, this is not. This is a beanie. This is a beanie, though. Ben's the only one on brand with his proper ATL represent hat. What do you call that, Ben? Is that a fitted hat?
This snapback? This is a fitted. This is what they would sell at Lids. Got this from my fantastic friend, the mayor of Ponce, Harold. You can find him as number 4 OR Locals on Instagram. Yeah, I'd vote for him too, at least for comptroller, because I don't really understand.
Look, I voted for him for mayor.
Well, okay, great. Well, God knows Atlanta needs the help. I am Ben Bullen, joined with the one and only Mr. Noel Brown, a man of many hats. And today we are bringing to you, fellow Ridiculous Historians, something that we have idly speculated on off air for quite some time. Baseball caps. Baseball caps are freaking everywhere, right? And the weird thing is, most people who wear them, spoiler, don't actually play baseball. Have you noticed
that? It's sort of like me and all my Vans stuff. I don't know if I told you guys this. I went into a Vans store and I bought this Vans jacket and I was wearing my Vans slip-ons and a Vans little bag. And the guy very sort of snarkily said, "All you need now is a skateboard, bro."
I remember that. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Vans is more of a lifestyle brand at this point, my guy. And that's the same with baseball. No one's gonna rag you for wearing a baseball cap if you're not like a slugger.
Right. You don't have to be Mickey Mantle. Their go-to casual wear these days, a baseball cap is a fashion statement. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. And even people who don't give a flip about, since we're a family show, who don't give a flip about baseball will probably have a baseball cap in their house somewhere in the Western world because it's perfect for yard work.
It's a functional item.
It is.
It shields your eyes from the sun. If it's if you live in places like, you know, Georgia, for example, where it gets blazing hot, that sun will fry pale, vampiric, you know, creatures like the three of us.
I appreciate and it.
No.
I go out in the sun. It's not my fault I'm Swedish.
Do you guys see this freckle? You're both, I think, of Northern European extraction. I am not, but I do crisp
quite quickly. And I've been bedeviled because I had to spend some time on my rooftop recently and the freckles just blossom. I have a freckle on the tip of my nose right now and it's driving me crazy.
Well, it's driving me gaga because I think it is adorbs.
Okay. Thanks, man.
But, no, it's true, man. You know, baseball caps or hats or whatever. People generally just call them baseball caps, are a very universally beloved thing, whether or not they're using it purely for function.
And we have an interesting story to explore. Let's cast our memories back there, folks. To the early days of the American institution known as baseball. Now, a lot of this is going to be old beans for our pal Max, but Noel, did you know that baseball has this really murky origin?
It kind of makes sense because it feels like the kind of thing that could be played in various ways with stuff just kind of laying around. Like, you know, every kid loves to play with sticks and yes. swing them around. Mm-hmm. And balls, you know, were obviously a very early popular toy. So I could imagine putting one and one together. You take the ball, you throw it up here, you hit it. Wait a minute, how can we take this a little further? And before you know it, you've got these kind of parallel versions of what might resemble today's baseball.
So what I've learned in just some fanhood deep dives is there's this concept of this sport called town ball in New England areas. The reason we know about this is like changing of laws. So like people would get together on the weekend and all go in the middle of town and play ball. But the changing of laws comes into like the puritanical laws against stuff on Sundays. And that's when they wanted to play it because everyone was more or less off. Like
there will be no stickball or dancing.
So there's these small, like old town laws where they say no activity outside of town ball is permitted.
That's the wholesome one.
Town ball was deemed spiritually clean enough. That's interesting.
Yeah, and there's stories of like people playing baseball in the background of Civil War like battles and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was it's a strange
Puritans
one.
Were like, this is the game Jesus would play.
1,000,000%. Jesus, he was a pretty good runner, probably, and he liked to hit things with sticks.
He's a pretty good runner,
He definitely did something involving sticks, but we don't have to get to that.
Oh, boy.
Bit of a bummer, guys. Spoiler
worth
alert.
Worth it.
But no, seriously, like this early version, you know, did it involve something resembling bases and the scoring system of what we know today? Or that seems like the kind of aspect, much like, you know, the way basketball evolved, even after it left the hands of, you know, the inventor. That's the kind of stuff that changes to suit the times, you know, to make it more exciting.
Yeah, it was similar to, they did have two opposing teams. It was similar to the game called Rounders. But if you looked at it now, like if you looked at the way the game town ball is arranged, then you would see like there's a sticky evolution. And it's because the older bat and ball games go back for centuries. To your earlier point, somebody finds a stick, someone invents a recreational ball. It doesn't take long. There's a French manuscript from like 1344 that shows a game called La Soule, which is probably one of the many things that informed the town ball of the immigrants who came to the United States. And I think town ball was called Philly ball or Philly town ball for a second.
Philly, like Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's a town that loves naming stuff after
itself. They really do.
Yeah.
Philly's an awesome city. You know, but even the part you said about the game Rounders, you know, you can see all kinds of analogs to that aspect of the game and things even like Duck, Duck, Goose or like children's sort of nursery rhyme type games, things where you're rounding certain set locations or even like tag, you know. And again, we're not here to to litigate the entire history of all games, but it does appear that there are little snippets of things that could have just kind of sprung from people surroundings that sure. are the basis of a lot of the games that we know today.
Sure. Yeah, man. That's beautifully put. And to Max's point, this was a situation wherein the rules for one kind of bat and ball game in one town may not be the same in another locale. And what another thing that didn't happen yet at this point in time was the idea of uniforms. People just had free time. And if they're sometimes puritanical, social orders were okay with it, they would show up with whatever clothing they had access to.
Hair shirts and skins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a religious sports joke.
Which is the origin of the mascot.
The hair shirt, isn't that a thing? That like it was like a garment that Puritans wore to prostrate themselves?
I don't know if it's
in an R.E.M. lyric. I don't remember if it was Puritans, but it was definitely.
It's like a really itchy, disgusting.
It's a very itchy, unpleasant shirt.
It's like an intentionally uncomfortable shirt.
Yeah, right. It's sort of the idea of self-flagellation, but a little bit more minor kind of, you know. Let me make myself eternally uncomfortable, but not necessarily whip myself.
Mortification and penance.
It's not very comfortable, like this beautiful baseball RotoWear shirt that I'm wearing right now. If you want cool baseball shirts, get them from RotoWear. They are not paying us for this.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's get Max some shirts.
Max with the facts. And it's true, uniforms were not a thing. Therefore, there was no need for a head-worn piece of accoutrement yet, you know, to be a part of that ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the earliest, what we could call the earliest modern baseball teams start to agglomerate around 1800. And then the National League is formed in 1876. And even then, no standardized hats. You just, most people, again, to the point of function, they're going to wear some sort of hat with a brim just to keep that sun out of their eyes. We went to MLB.com where they have this great interview with a guy named Tom Schreiber, who's the senior curator for the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. And he talks about it in a couple of different ways. And he says, look, the New York, wait for it, Knickerbockers. We brought back Knickerbockers.
Ah, we had to.
Thought it was done, huh?
Such a great word. They were, according to MLB.com, the first team to have an official uniform. But you mentioned the idea of people bringing their own kind of brimmed hat from home. That would more likely have been something resembling sort of a floppy beach hat or like a farmer's straw hat or something, right?
Or barbershop quartet hat.
There you go. Yes, one of those flat-topped ones. Those are great. I just pictured like a bandstand in a parade. I do love a parade. But yeah, at this point, they were wearing what would be called at the time chip hats or, of course, straw hats. But these would have been brimmed, you know, in 360 degrees.
Yeah. And let's go to Charles A. Peverly. He wrote a book called The Book of American Pastimes in 1866. And he says, look, the Knickerbockers over in New York, they said, we need uniforms. So they have blue woolen pantaloons, another beautiful word. They have white flannel shirts. And then they had, like you described, Noel, the chip. And the chip was, seriously, it was like this old school straw hat, flat atop or flat crowned. And then with that 360 degree brim. And all I can imagine is that they would play baseball and then go sing at the barbershop. We don't know if that's true, but that's how I like to picture it.
They definitely had the mustaches for it, likely, at this time, and riding their penny farthing bicycles around town. But you can picture already what the issues might be. You know, straw hat, it's not particularly durable. Sure. I mean, it is relatively durable, I guess.
The rain over time.
And yeah, we would in one strand can come frayed, and then all of a sudden the whole thing comes apart. But most importantly, it was about the tightness of the fit. And also that 360 degrees of brim gives the wind 360 degrees of surface area to blast that thing off your head, or just, you know, knocking it off by doing a slide or whatever it might be. There's any number of ways you could have an embarrassing wardrobe malfunction.
Diving for a ball, you know, next thing you know, you've lost your cap, you've lost your hat.
That's worse than a cowboy falling off his horse. That's
very bad.
It's very embarrassing.
It's worse than a clown without the right shoes. Mm-hmm. Or without their pink lemonade. Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
So this uniform stuff is important because it also functions as a sort of proof of membership instead of an ID card, you would see the uniform. You'd be like, oh, that guy's for he plays for the Brooklyn Excelsiors.
Is that real?
That's a real thing. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're a real team. And
wasn't that, what's his name? Marvel guy's favorite word, Stan Lee. He would always sign everything with Excelsior. Doesn't it just mean kind of excellence?
Yes.
Just like, yeah. Fabulousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a good name for a team, right?
Definitely.
So
it would have been a word in popular use at the time, too, right? Yeah. That strikes me as the way that Stan Lee was probably a lad. He probably attended some of these games, you know?
Stan Lee is eternal. So this is, Excelsior is also a word for a type of wood shaving.
Etymology
is so weird, man.
And it's also a good medication for if you have an upset tummy.
Is that true?
No, that's Alka-Seltzer.
You had me. That was good. So this
Max made the deepest cringe I've ever seen just now.
Yeah, he's holding. Dearly. I know what that hand signal means, by the way, Max. I get it. So the we'll call it a victory sign since we're a family show. So this team, if we fast forward to the 1860s, let's get to the Excelsiors. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Snagajob.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer.
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. They first wore what we would call the predecessor of the modern baseball cap, but this was a little more floppity, kind of like a deflated souffle or a beret. Oof. It's called
like a chef's hat that's sort of flopped over.
Like a tiny, leany chef's hat.
Tiny floppy beret. Who came up with this? Didn't berets already exist? Surely they had examples to turn to that would have generated something less awkward than that. I guess not. I mean, it's right here in the history.
Hat technology was in its infancy, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, it is funny, though, because we think of hats, you know, as in popular, you know, culture and history as being something that you wore to look fancy. And it wasn't necessarily something you wore in a fight or like in battle. That's what helmets were for, you know. So it does make sense that they had a little bit of, growing pains when it came to figuring out the right type of hat that would be, you know, suited for this kind of sport.
Trial and error. Yeah.
They obviously decided, no, we're not doing helmets, guys. We're not doing helmets. Because, you know, football was a thing, American football, with those leather type helmets. And you would wonder why they didn't go with that with baseball. They decided they wanted to differentiate themselves as a sport, perhaps. I'm just conjecturing here.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's also consider that the baseball glove, which is ubiquitous today on the field, wasn't a thing when baseball first That's came true. Around. In fact, it was considered unmanly and unsportsmanlike to use a glove.
And to continue on Noel's point there, it wasn't until the 1900s that they started wearing helmets when they batted.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know anything about the history of football, Max, but like that movie Leatherheads, you know, that era seems roughly around this time we're talking. But that was probably a little more early 1900s, too. So I wonder if early football, they weren't wearing helmets for a while, because, you know, that's obviously always been a bit of a controversy with that sport about head injuries. It would definitely be like, oh, we got to wear helmets.
So the first, widely believed to be the first, like, organized football game is Rutgers versus Princeton, called New Jersey at the time, which is November 6, 1869.
Okay, so we're in the same ballpark.
Yeah. But leather helmets was around for way later than you think it should. I think we're talking good bit. Like, they were wearing helmets in baseball before they got actual real helmets in football.
Okay, that makes sense, too. That makes sense.
But football was also very different back then.
Very much so.
That football was not...
Was it rougher?
Just fewer commercials.
It was it was more similar to rugby.
Got it.
There wasn't, like, the forward passing game was a relatively recent development. It was a lot more running around. People, like, the big guys in the field were, like, 210 pounds.
Also, less violent or more, do you think?
Less.
Yeah, I was thinking also wearing a hat in Western society at this time is considered sort of de rigueur if you are a person who is not a piece of trash. Yeah, you're supposed to have a hat. So it makes sense.
Like all the time. Like you know, hat in hand, expressions like that. I mean, if you doff your cap and all of that. Yeah, exactly.
So these Excelsior folks in Brooklyn, they are first to the plate with the idea of matching hats, but they are not by any means alone. There are also groups like the New York Mutuals. This team says, we like this.
Wholesome name.
It was a different time. These teams the like, yeah, these teams, I mean, good on them for not picking some terrible racial thing, but they said, okay, we like this idea. We like the idea of these floppity caps. The merino cap becomes the number one go-to choice. There has always been an attempt at monopolization of the baseball cap, and all these caps were made by a sporting goods company in New York named Peck and Snyder. They sold a cap called the number one. It costs between $1.25 and $2. So if you look at, to get a sense of it, this is around like, let's do a boop. Let's do an inflation calculator, huh?
And a boop.
And a boop.
So for funsies, in 1860 or so, $2 then is worth about $76.31 today. So these were not cheap for people, but they were official.
Yeah, no. And bro, I just Googled merino caps, kind of wanted to see what it looked like. And if I'm correct, there's a bunch of different ones. And it's obviously, you know, a long time ago, but it's probably become a brand as well. But it looks a lot like the kind of hat slash helmets that jockeys wore.
Yes.
And when I was looking through this research material originally, that seems so obvious when you think about it, that they borrowed the design from horse racing. But I never would have put the two together, you know, because it's almost a little bit more of a nub of a brim rather than like the longer brim that, you know, that it kind of evolved into. But I that was a real aha moment for me. Like, oh, of course. Yes. Jockeys have been doing the single outward brim. And yeah, I mean, definitely older than we're talking here, dating back to around the late 17th century.
Mm-hmm. And you can see versions of that specific type of hat in bicycling communities today. It's going to be rounded, fitting close to the crown. It has that abbreviated bill that goes a little bit down. And this is also the era when people start wearing what you might think of as valet caps, like the flat-topped cylindrical things that still have a bill. The Merino cap, number one by Peck and Snyder, is the gold standard for a while. And if we fast forward to 1900, it becomes known as the Brooklyn style cap. And this, the big breakthrough for all of this stuff is that directional bill, the bill that just covers over the front of your face instead of all the way around. And now, you know what, let's go to a quote from our pal Tom. He talks about, I just love his conversational tone, you guys. He has a great quotation about the horse racing that you're mentioning, Noel.
Yeah, and he's specifically referring to just the fact that by a little later in the 1850s, you had more images of this stuff that we could refer back to. So he says, you're definitely seeing people wearing what you and I would think of as a baseball cap, which is a crown with a bill that comes out just one direction instead of all the way around. This is not a particularly groundbreaking object. Really, something like that had been worn in horse racing by jockeys for many years. We call it a baseball cap because we're Americans, and it's just been associated with baseball for a long time. Little micro. Snark there. I thought
you guys would like that. Max, I saw you laughing.
But it's not like it was invented for baseball. The cap had just been around a very long time, which makes sense. We do that all the time with stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the victor go the spoils and all of that, right? Whatever thing gets associated with a thing in a bigly enough way, that becomes the thing that people, you know, think of first and often what it's called.
History is written by the winners, right? History is retold by the victors, and this is true in so many things. The name I was trying to look for earlier was pillbox. The pillbox version of the cap becomes popular in the late 1880s, and then that ultimately, I don't know why I'm mapping this out on my own cap right now, but that ultimately gives way to the sort of six-paneled round baseball cap so ubiquitous today.
Dude, Peck and Snyder as a brand, still around.
Yeah.
And they deal in kind of vintage style baseball caps. But they also make jackets and sweatshirts and sweatpants. Pretty pricey stuff. New York Bulldog hooded sweatshirt, 1949, $162. And it appears that it's one of those brands like Supreme or whatever, where you go to their website and everything's just marked sold out.
Right.
So it's like, thank you for the helpful listings.
Well, they Peck relaunched.
Makes sense.
They went dark. They relaunched in 2020 because of the nostalgia and the interest in that. And that's why you can still see some teams playing in old school baseball uniforms. It's a big draw.
Yeah, actually, to that point, I just sent in the chat here the 2017 Pittsburgh Pirates hat, because Pittsburgh Pirates is like, you know, one of the original NL teams. They've been around there's no original NL teams like the AL. The AL had like eight teams that came out, but they were a really old school team. And so they brought back the pillbox hats, which is just like, I have my feelings about the Pittsburgh Pirates. I will not air them here, but I like them. I like Pittsburgh Pirate fans, let's just say.
Okay.
But yeah. And I like the players on the team. It's not the, okay, kind of the okay. problem. We can probably figure out my elimination.
Yeah, I could kind of tell, yeah.
Like, I think they're just a cool team. They have a beautiful ballpark. And like, this is like a hat I would love to have because it's such a cool hat.
Because you want to look like you work on a train?
Yeah, man. So, what'd you think I would say there?
Funny. I know. funny aside about Pittsburgh. So I was there on a weird mission for a different show called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I was very cold and I had to put on, I went to the hotel and I was like, I underestimated the weather. And I got a hoodie that just had, you know me, I'm not a logo guy. So I got a hoodie that just had a P on it. I didn't know it was a Pittsburgh Pirates. And I went to one of the only places open late at night to get food, which was a dive bar. And this bartender instantly became friends with me. It was like, not a lot of people have the sand to wear that hoodie around here.
Around these parts.
Except in a Pittsburgh accent.
I mean, like, you know, like Pittsburgh's one of those cities. Detroit's very much the same way. Cleveland's the same way, where their teams are like the number one team in town. And, you know, Atlanta's kind of that way, but those Midwestern teams, oh, they love their baseball teams.
They do. And it's no surprise then that this hat still has an evolution to go through, because as weird as it is to point this out, at this time, no team had a logo on their hat yet. Mm. It was just a color That was the differentiation. It wasn't until 1894 when the then Boston Braves put letter forms on their caps that people started saying, okay, let's get some branding on here.
You know, it makes me picture the letterman's jackets of, you know, Ivy League colleges and universities and all of that stuff. And I believe that stuff dates back to the mid to late 1800s as well. So it almost seems like these things were happening concurrently. And then maybe one sort of influenced the other as they started to evolve. Because I guess it probably wasn't until the 50s or so that like high school letterman jackets became a thing, you know, with varsity cheerleaders and the like. You know,
it's such a feedback loop, right? These things feed onto each other. Think about this. If you're a fan of your local sports team in any decade, especially before this kind of merchandise came out, that is the coolest flex for you to show up with them on your shirt or to show up and say, hey, I've got a hat from the Boston Braves. And someone says, won't they move to Atlanta later? And you say, I don't know, carpe diem. Yeah.
They got to stop in Milwaukee at some point.
Sure. But then, you know, of course, there's that like it it makes you feel connected with the players, too, because sure. You're like oftentimes wearing the same. You can buy the same one that they wear by the same jerseys. That's why those things, you know, the nice ones go for a pretty penny. But that is the flex in and of itself to be like, I'm on the team, too, you know.
So by just 1 year after 1894, I don't know why I said it that way, 1895, three more teams have done the same thing. Fast forward, it's 1901. This is another Easter egg for you, Max. The Detroit Tigers are officially the first major league team to put a mascot on their caps. It only lasts for a little bit because, I think 2 years later, they say, mascot, that's busy. You know, that's just the design is complicated. Let's just put a D on there. D for Detroit.
Just a D. Just the big D. Just give them the big D, y'all. That's all we need.
For Detroit, I mean, that's still what they rock to this day. But also, as an additional note, if it's 1901 American League, just doing this off top of my head, that would be their first season, too. So they walked in, like, this is what we're doing. They're coming in loud and proud.
Let's
like
make Detroit a splash.
And I believe they're also using that sick, classic, old English font, that kind of gothic, kind of very serif-y font. And that's the thing. That is the very definition of branding. Taking a letter that belongs to literally everyone and making it yours and making it associate, you know, with you and your whole thing. That is brilliant. And everybody couldn't do that. You know, I mean, you had to be kind of first to market to be able to claim the D.
We could do it. Like
we get the A here in Atlanta, and that you know, people say it. When people say the A, they are referring to Atlanta.
That's also how we know you're not from here, by the way.
That's also true. But people do say that outside. They also, Hotlanta, we don't like that, y'all. Oh, we don't think it's funny. Oh, it's a big cringe if you're a band and you say Hotlanta, right? Those sounds emanating from the audience, they're cringes.
A friend of mine, she got back into online dating, and she told me that the most obnoxious, like, online dating is apparently a minefield. I've never done it, as you guys know, but, like, she was telling me that she had learned these weird red flags, and one of them, dating in Atlanta, was when a guy she was going to meet was like, I love the ATL, Hotlanta. And she was like, one, you're not from here. Two, I don't think we get along.
I will say ATL in texts and as an abbreviation, but I'll also say NYC or LA or SF, but I wouldn't speak SF out loud or say ATL out loud. These are shorthands for brevity.
San Fran's
even worse. But yeah, let's get to Jim Lillifors and Ball Cap Nation, a journey through the world of America's national hat. That's great. He gives a lot of reasons to the rising popularity of the baseball hat and its adoption as, like we were talking about at the top of the show, more of a lifestyle brand.
Yeah. So that's the big question, right? We know it has functionality for baseball players. We know it functions on several levels, but why did it become a thing? Why do the majority of people buying and wearing baseball caps now have nothing to do with baseball? This is weird. It's kind of the same reason that smoking became popular.
Ooh, because, tell me more.
Yeah, because baseball hits television. Television is invented by Philip Farnsworth. He never really gets credit for it, but television explodes, and so does the American obsession with baseball. Now you can watch it. You don't have to drive into town. Right. So folks began wanting that association we're talking about. We want to show support for our teams through their hats. It's being depicted as cool. Also, baseball caps start going to other non-sports shows on television and in film. Tom Selleck has a baseball cap on Magnum PI. MacGyver has a baseball cap, and MacGyver's awesome. Guys, he has code.
He does all kinds. You see, there was this one episode. I've probably talked about this before, maybe when MacGyver came up with this one episode. It's burned into my memory. He does something to the like junction box at a busy intersection where he opens it up and like monkeys with it a little bit, and it causes a giant pile up accident, and he's doing it to create a diversion. And I'm just like, MacGyver, that is not cool. You could have hurt some innocent bystanders. Of course, nobody gets hurt, but he didn't know. I mean, I thought that was a little bit anarchist cookbook of him.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that reference, Noel. Yeah, MacGyver, there's a lot to say about him. He also did clearly continue like propagating interest in the baseball cap.
There was fighter
also,
pilots, right?
Fighter like, pilots.
Just the, you know, and specifically in pop culture, like Tom Cruise, the coolest guy around at the time.
Even now, every single Marvel movie character who needs to travel incognito or in disguise, they've got a baseball cap and sunglasses. Take that, Clark Kent.
Yeah, same with celebrities in general. You'll often see like paparazzi photos, you know, on TMZ or whatever of like, you know, Nick Nolte. Why am I saying Nick Nolte? What is it? 1985?
No.
The airport, you know, with a hat, like a baseball cap and sunglasses down. Michael Jackson used to do it. I mean, it's pretty much the disguise de rigueur, but it makes sense functionally for that too, because you can pull that brim down and it shadows your face, you know.
Anthony Mackie, I think we were flying out of Texas or something.
I think that's right. We saw him on the plane and he was certainly wearing a hat.
So there's also another thing that occurs in this milieu. In the 1960s, agriculture companies start saying, hey, this could be another business card for us. This is a great way to advertise stuff like John Deere. Exactly. And today,
then hipsters will end up wearing them ironically later.
Right. And they'll still pay money, because money spent ironically or unironically still matters. So
just like an action done long enough ironically just becomes a thing you do.
Right. And that's why agricultural companies are the basis of what we call trucker hats today, which are sort of the kissing cousin of the baseball caps, like alligators, crocodiles, crows, ravens, they're very, very similar. And so with this, the cap becomes more and more mainstream, and the men and women start to play with it for style. This is where I'm going to do it. This is just for the four of us, because we're not a visual podcast, but this is where you get it turned to the side.
Yeah, and like obnoxious. It looks like with your hands on your headphones like that,
I know.
It looks like you're making some sick beats or you're ready to like spit some fire bars. but that's the thing though. I mean, in hip hop culture too, the hat and the baseball hat, whether it be sports related or just kind of like cool streetwear brand related, it is a huge part of that uniform. Not to mention that like a lot of British, urban British kids also developed, you know, started wearing it around the time of like grime music and a lot of the kind of electronic hip hop stuff, kind of crossover stuff of the early 2000s and beyond in the UK.
Oh, yeah, man. And that point about musicians is excellent. Punk rockers are wearing baseball hats. Grunge singers in the 90s are wearing baseball hats. Pop stars are showing up to sing the national anthem with, surprise, a baseball cap. It's just the marketing is there. And this means that it gets incredibly popular. It starts to fragment as people take their own spin on this. And that's why now in general, and we get this according to our good friends at Vogue, there are four major types of baseball hat. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Snagajob.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer.
Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right?
Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert.
Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We've named each of them kind of in the course of this episode. But what is there? There's snapback, adjustable, flex fit, fitted. Full disclosure, our pal Noel has an example of all of these because you're a man of many hats.
I like hats. And I was thinking back, you know, in researching this episode about like, when did I make the conscious decision to become a hat guy, like a baseball hat guy? And I remember roughly around the time, and it wasn't because of anything functional. I just decided one day I was playing in bands and stuff, like, I'm going to be a guy that wears hats. And I, for a long time, had really long hair too. And I think the hat started entering my life when I cut my hair short. And I was like, well, before I had my long hair, that was my thing. And now I've got hats. So I've never looked back. I've probably got dozens, and I've got examples of all of these. The Flex Fit is a fun one that I don't have very many of, but it's sort of a stretchier hat that would maybe be considered a little sporty or something that's weatherproof, you know, for like hiking and better at soaking up sweat and not staining, you know, the fabric, stuff like that. Vinted kind of something you associate with like an activewear brand like Lululemon or something, you know.
And Max and I were talking off air too. I was a little bit surprised because I came in hot.
And I was like, Max, this is going to be such a great episode, bro. You're going to love this. How many baseball caps do you own? And for anybody who has not had the immense privilege of seeing our friend Max in person, the guy's got long, shiny locks of hair. It's very
lustrous locks.
Yeah, I was telling Ben, I'm like, yeah, I have hats somewhere, but I haven't cut my hair in 5 years. So it's like, I can't really wear a hat. I mean, I could still put it down. I could.
Well, but- a hat. That with a ponytail is definitely a vibe, brother.
That's
I'm
a
just
choice.
Gonna put that out there.
That's very much a choice because you got to thread it through the back.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
That's something I can see our longtime friend Alan Finkbeiner doing.
Absolutely. Oh man, Alan, I hope you're enjoying your retirement. Alan has been our mutual Sweetwater Sound representative collectively for about 20 years.
He sent me some candy without
having to buy gear?
No, we got some gear.
Okay, cool. That's what they do. Sweetwater, right. They always
include candy. Appreciate it. And we will give you a hat if you want. We should get Ridiculous History hats.
That'd be a great one. Yeah, look, get old Rasputin on one. I'd wear that. But then the fitted hat, you know, what you're wearing, Ben, that is also. So a fitted hat is kind of considered maybe a more high-end baseball hat because it's a specific size. So oftentimes you've got to go to a place that has lots of different options. Those are going to be a little bit more expensive. They're really durable. I only have like one or two. I think one of them is a Supreme hat, and it has a baseball tie-in. I am not a sports fan, so I don't wear baseball hats or sports hats, but this is the only thing. But I just really got it because of the logo and the colorway. But yeah, I'm a big Supreme fan, big Vans hat fan, and I like those. What are those ones with the animals on them, Ben? You have one too, Goren Brothers.
Yeah,
I have a handful of those.
Yeah.
Those are fun. But I just think it's a fun way to accessorize. You know, I was blessed with perfect eyesight, so I can't wear glasses, so I got to wear hats.
You could still wear glasses if you want.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's sort of like wearing
a
baseball.
Hasn't stopped a lot of people
jersey if you're not really a follower of that scene.
I will do that. That is one of the, this is like a bowling key to insulating, or like I don't want to make it sound insidious, but it to fitting in a strange place, especially in the United States. If you want to fit in, no matter your demographic, wear something from the local sports team and they'll be like, he gets it.
That's a good one. And oftentimes, too, you'll see, like in the movie Drive, for example, when you know, there's a huge kind of chase sequence, or he's running from the cops in the very first sequence of the film, which is great. When he finally does his getaway, he parks his car at L.A. Dodgers Stadium and gets out right as all of the sports fans are leaving the game. He's been listening to it on the radio the whole time there right as the crowd's letting out. And then he puts on an LA Dodgers hat.
Of course he does. Also,
excellent
Drive
way to blend
in. Drive is a great film, and I have been leaning hard on dressing as the protagonist in Drive whenever I'm lazy come a Halloween.
Oh, for sure. You got that jacket with the scorpion and the leather fingerless gloves. All you need now is a hammer, and I'm sure you got a couple of those laying around.
All right. Well, this is not a court, so we're not going to answer that one.
What about the snapback, though? I get a little confused between the difference between snapback and adjustable. They seem like they're a little bit the same, but I think maybe snapback literally is the plasticky, you know, buttony things
with the little pegs.
Yes, the other one might be one with fabric that you have to cinch through a little buckle kind
like
of thing.
Like a belt. Mm-hmm, like a tiny belt for your head, finally.
A head belt.
Yeah, a head belt, finally. This stuff is so popular right now that if we fast forward, even though we're a history show, if we fast forward to the future, we can tell you that despite a global pandemic, the world baseball cap market was $17.98 billion in 2021. By 2029, it's going to be $25.64 billion. And there is one company in particular that is super happy about that news because they are making a lot of that money.
That's right. Since 1993, the New Era Cap Company in Buffalo, New York, has been the exclusive cap provider for Major League Baseball. So there's money in them heads.
There's money in those crowds. I don't know. I have a hard time with monopolies. I think we all do. It reminds me of like the one place that gets the mud for baseballs.
Sure.
You guys know what I'm talking about?
I guess so. I guess that has made the mud by having wet cleats. I didn't know it was.
Well, it's like a secret. It's mud from a secret location.
No joke.
No joke. This is 100% true. Max, you're nodding, right? This is true.
Oh, I'm just gonna take a shot at New Era. That's all I was gonna do.
Oh, yeah,
take a shot.
So,
New Era. This goes to their Monopoly thing. Last year, the Atlanta Braves had a new home run celebration. Have you guys seen those hilariously big hats?
Yeah, sure.
So you put it on, and it's like this big. It's like a massive hat.
Braves, he's holding his hands very far apart, fair listeners.
Yes. Just type in, I don't know, Brian Robinson big hat. He's a running back for the Washington Commanders. And so the Braves were wearing these after the home runs, and then New Era's like, you can't wear that because it's not our hat. It's like, well, then make one. Make one then.
Yeah. Also,
come on, New Era.
Also, the baseball mud thing is true. Maybe that's a story for a future episode. Right?
For sure. Well, speaking of stories to maybe round out this episode, we've talked about all the different types of hats. People may be screaming at their podcast device saying, what about them trucker hats?
Ooh, big fans we are.
What's the difference? I mean, that's what got me started. Honestly, too, I'm remembering now when I started wearing hats, it was in an era where there were a lot of like kind of cool bands from like Athens, like the Drive-By Truckers and like bands like Granddaddy that were rocking trucker hats pretty hard. Wilco, you know, things like that.
You were going to say Wilco.
Yeah, it was just a vibe at the time. So I think I was like, I want to be on that, you know, hipster train.
It's a good vibe.
It is a good vibe. But the trucker hat, it's sort of very much like the baseball hat, but it just has a plastic kind of mesh back to it. And some foam. Baseball hats do too. And foam, that's
foam
right.
Foam front panel, right?
But then you also see some of these design choices being used in what would be considered baseball. The lines can be blurry.
It's like the what is a sandwich question.
That's
right?
A big one. We don't know. We still don't know.
And I read a mathematical paper about the definition of a sandwich. And
bless
it was
you
like,
for doing God's work.
This job is so weird. But these hats. I sound like that guy. What was that movie? Stand and Deliver. These kids.
Oh, man, I don't know that one.
He saves the school. I think that's correct.
That's all. Thank you.
So the Edward James Olmos. It's all coming back to me. You remember him, the actor?
He was Edward James Olmos, a pretty good actor.
Oh, wow.
He's actually good. I had to do it. Yeah. But you know those design features of the humble trucker hat were all created for specific reasons to fill specific functions. Like the mesh was for breathability. The foam added a little bit of structure and stability, and also makes the hat keep its shape. Also gives a nice solid foundation. Oh, they're taller. Trucker hats are typically a little bit
higher
taller.
Profile,
they kind of can sit higher above your forehead. And the foam also gave a nice solid foundation for the logos. And again, much like I would consider the John Deere type hats that we were talking about earlier to be more in the vein of a trucker hat.
Sure.
Because those were meant to be worn by workmen, you know?
Like so a Carhartt hat or
that's
something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't it funny how Carhartts now also become this weird lifestyle? I'm not wearing a Carhartt hat right now, but there's Carhartt stores in like Soho in New York, you know, and it's a total hipster mecca kind of brand. You see it in celebrities all the time.
That takes us to the larger thing. We see this in food and cuisine as well. I'm just very excited about some barbecue later today, which is the thing that would be considered traditionally working class or even lower class. It becomes elevated. It becomes haute cuisine. Like New York went through this whole bologna sandwich phase. And we see that, I argue, in fashion as well.
Plussed up trash food. Or trash fashion. Yeah, because then you had like Von Dutch, you know, all of these kind of big, like hip LA brands or whatever. I mean, arguably hip. I think they're kind of done now. But there was a big period of time where like Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears and that whole set were wearing these Von Dutch hats, which were trucker hats. I think there's actually a documentary about the rise and fall of that company. I think something weird happened, like the owners or the founders were like sketchy in some way. But point is, the other feature is the snappy snap thing that makes it adjustable. Because, you know, some truckers' heads are bigger than others.
Yes.
I'm not a trucker, but I typically have to wear my snappy snaps on like the last two snaps. I got a pretty big noggin.
So this is that goes back to the idea of one size fits all. It means you can buy there's another ubiquity or another advantage to the baseball cap in general, outside of the fitted, a lot of these will be adjustable for almost any head size. So you can be a kid who wants to rep your team and your heroes, and that hat can fit you too, which is really cool. Even it's super cute, you know, and it looks like kind of big.
Yeah, I like it when it looks kind of big. I think it's cool.
Yeah,
100%.
I'm like, little guy.
But it's not considered like embarrassing or awkward looking. It's cool.
It's endearing. And so with that, of course, I think we've done a good job of not fanboying too much about hats.
No. I love hats. Hats are great.
Bum, 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 bum. We also know, thankfully, that we are not getting Max a baseball hat for his birthday.
Max with the hats.
I thought it was a real home run. But I was incorrect. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed.
Really walked that one in.
Wow. Man. Max turned off his camera and then turned it back on to glare at me for that one. I can't wait for the sound cue.
Oh, boy.
I also can't wait for our next episode this week, where we're going to talk about one of the most continually fascinating presidents in the history of the United States, the one and only famously talkative Calvin Coolidge.
Accent on the cool.
Yes, accent. He's the coolest Calvin in town.
Calvin Klein? Wow, that was very alliterative.
That was great. You've also probably heard of the religion that was started just to worship this guy, Calvinism.
Don't fact check us. Big disinfo, fake news.
Big thanks to super producer Mr. Max Williams. Big thanks, of course, to a special announcement. We dragged this guy so hard, but big sincere shout out to our dear friend Jonathan Strickland, aka the Quister. Nobody tell him we were nice to him, not even once on the show. Okay, that dies with us.
Yeah. Huge thanks to Chris Farasiotis and his fresh wizard beard here in spirit. Eve's Jeffcoat. Alex Williams, who composed this banging theme. Max, again, I don't remember if we thanked you already. You know, the thanks is ever present for you, Max, and comes directly from our hearts. And to you, Ben, this is a fun one.
Oh, hey, right back at you. I am going to do the joke again because it's so horrible. Well, thanks to our research associates as well. I think this episode was a home run.
Indeed. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.